Welcome to the Hackberry House of Chosun. My name is Bob. I'm reading today from a Jonathan Edwards reader put together by John Smith, Harry Stout, and Kenneth Minkema. The date on that is 1995. And there are just some interesting quotations from Jonathan Edwards and stories about his life and teachings. And in one of them, called A Faithful Narrative, he tells, Jonathan Edwards does, the story of the Great Awakening and things that were happening in terms of revival all around him. And he goes from detail to detail, but at the end of this narrative, he gives a personal illustration, a story that I thought I would share with you. He says, to give a clearer idea of the nature and manner of the operations of God's Spirit in this wonderful effusion of it, I would give an account of an adult person, a young woman whose name was Abigail Hutchinson. I pitch upon her especially because she is now dead, and so it may be more fit to speak freely of her than of living instances. Though I am under far greater disadvantages on other accounts to give a full and clear narrative of her experiences than I might of some others. Nor can any account be given but what has been retained in the memories of her near friends and some others of what they have heard her express in her lifetime. She was of a rational, understanding family, and there could be nothing in her education that tended toward enthusiasm. Now, that word is used by the people of that day and to mean excited worship and excited living for Jesus. But nothing in her life tended that way, but rather to the contrary extreme. It is in no wise the temper of the family to be ostentatious of experiences, and it was far from being her temper. She was, before her conversion, to the observation of her neighbors, of a sober and inoffensive conversation or way of life, and was a still, quiet, reserved person. She had long been infirm of body, but her infirmity had never been observed at all to incline her to be notional or fanciful or to occasion anything of religious melancholy. She was under awakenings scarcely a week before there seemed to be plain evidence of her being savingly converted. She was first awakened in the winter season, on Monday, by something she heard her brother say of the necessity of being in good earnest in seeking regenerating grace, together with the news of the conversion of the young woman before mentioned, whose conversion so generally affected most of the young people here. This news wrought much upon her and stirred up a spirit of envy in her towards this young woman, whom she thought very unworthy of being distinguished from others by such a mercy. But it engaged her in a firm resolution to do her utmost to obtain the same blessing, and considering with herself what course she could take, she thought that she had not had a sufficient knowledge of the principles of religion to render her capable of conversion. Whereupon she resolved thoroughly to search the Scriptures, and accordingly immediately began at the beginning of the Bible, intending to read it through. She continued thus till Thursday, and then there was a sudden alteration by a great increase of her concern in an extraordinary sense of her own sinfulness, particularly the sinfulness of her nature and wickedness of her heart, which came upon her, as she expressed it, as a flash of lightning, struck her into an exceeding terror. Upon which she left off reading the Bible in course as she had begun, and turned to the New Testament to see if she could not find some relief there for her distressed soul. Her great terror, she said, was that she had sinned against God. Her distress grew more and more for 3 days, until, as she said, she saw nothing but blackness of darkness before her, and her very flesh trembled for fear of God's wrath. She wondered and was astonished at herself, that she had been so concerned for her body and had applied so often to physicians to heal that, and had neglected her soul. Her sinfulness appeared with a very awful aspect to her, especially in three things, namely, her original sin, and her sin in murmuring at God's providence, in the weakness and affliction she had been under, and in want of duty to parents, though others had looked upon her to excel in dutifulness. On Saturday, she was so earnestly engaged in reading the Bible and other books that she continued in it, searching for something to relieve her, till her eyes were so dim that she could not know the letters. While she was thus engaged in reading, prayer, and other religious exercises, she thought of those words of Christ, where he warns us not to be as the heathen, that think they shall be heard for their much speaking, in Matthew 6:7, which, she said, led her to see that she had trusted in her own prayers and religious performances, and now she was put to a nonplus and knew not which way to turn herself or where to seek relief. While her mind was in this posture, her heart, she said, seemed to fly to the minister for refuge, hoping that he could give her some relief. She came the same day to her brother with the countenance of a person in distress, expostulating with him why he had not told her more of her sinfulness, and earnestly inquiring of him what she should do. She seemed that day to feel in herself an enmity against the Bible, which greatly affrighted her. Her sense of her own exceeding sinfulness continued increasing from Thursday till Monday, and she gave this account of it, that it had been an opinion, which till now she had entertained, that she was not guilty of Adam's sin, nor any way concerned in it, because she was not active in it, but that now she saw she was guilty of that sin, and all over defiled by it, and that the sin which she brought into the world with her was alone sufficient to condemn her. On the Sabbath day, she was so ill that her friends thought it not best that she should go to public worship, of which she seemed very desirous. But when she went to bed on the Sabbath day night, she took up a resolution that she would the next morning go to the minister, hoping to find some relief there. As she awaked on Monday morning, a little before day, she wondered within herself at the easiness and calmness she felt in her mind, which was of that kind which she never felt before. As she thought of this, such words as these were in her mind, quote, "The words of the Lord are pure words, health to the soul and marrow to the bones," end of quote. And then these words came to her mind from 1 John 1:7, "The blood of Christ cleanses us from all sin." These were accompanied with a lively sense of the excellency of Christ and his sufficiency to satisfy for the sins of the whole world. She then thought of that expression, "'Tis a pleasant thing for the eyes to behold the sun," S-U-N, which words then seemed to her to be very applicable to Jesus Christ. By these things her mind was led into such contemplations and views of Christ as filled her exceeding full of joy. She told her brother in the morning that she had seen, that is, in realizing views by faith, seen Christ the last night, and that she had really thought that she had not knowledge enough to be converted, but, she says, God can make it quite easy. On Monday she felt all day a constant sweetness in her soul. She had a repetition of the same discoveries of Christ three mornings together that she had on Monday morning, and much in the same manner at each time, waking a little before day, but brighter and brighter every time. She had many extraordinary discoveries of the glory of God in Christ, sometimes in some particular attributes, and sometimes in many. She gave an account that once, as those four words passed through her mind, wisdom, justice, goodness, and truth, Her soul was filled with a sense of the glory of each of these divine attributes, but especially the last. Truth, she said. Truth sunk the deepest. And therefore, as these words passed, this was repeated. Truth, truth. Her mind was so swallowed up with a sense of the glory of God's truth and other perfections that she said it seemed as though her life was going, and that she saw it was easy with God to take away her life by discoveries of himself. Soon after this, she went to a private religious meeting, and her mind was full of a sense and view of the glory of God all the time. And when the exercise was ended, some asked her concerning what she had experienced, and she began to give them an account. But as she was relating it, it revived such a sense of the same things that her strength failed. They were obliged to take her and lay her upon the bed. Afterwards she was greatly affected and rejoiced with these words, "Worthy is the Lamb that was slain," Revelation 5:12. Once, when she came to me, she told how that at such and such a time she thought she saw as much of God and had as much joy and pleasure as was possible in this life, and that yet afterwards God discovered himself yet far more abundantly, and she saw the same things that she had seen before yet more clearly, and in another and far more excellent and delightful manner, and was filled with a more exceeding sweetness. She likewise gave me such an account of the sense she once had from day to day of the glory of Christ and of God in his various attributes, that it seemed to me she dwelt for days together in a kind of beatific vision of God, and seemed to have, as I thought, as immediate a fellowship with him as a child with a father. And at the same time, she appeared most remote from any high thought of herself and of her own sufficiency, but was like a little child, and expressed a great desire to be instructed, telling me that she longed very often to come to me for instruction, and wanted to live at my house, that I might tell her her duty. She had a great longing to die, that she might be with Christ, which increased till she thought she did not know how to be patient to wait till God's time should come. But once when she felt those longings, she asked, she thought with herself, "If I long to die, why do I go to physicians?" When she concluded that her longings for death were not well regulated. After this, she often put it to herself, which she would choose, whether to live or to die, to be sick or to be well. And she found she could not tell, till at last she found herself disposed to say these words, "I am quite willing to live and quite willing to die, quite willing to be sick and quite willing to be well, and quite willing for anything that God will bring upon me." And then she said, "I felt myself perfectly easy in a full submission to the will of God." She then lamented much that she had been so eager in her longings for death, as it argued want of such a resignation to God as ought to be. She seemed henceforward to continue in this resigned frame until death. After this, her illness increased upon her, and once after she had before spent the greater part of the night in extreme pain, she waked out of a little sleep with these words in her heart and mouth, "I am willing to suffer for Christ's sake. I am willing to spend and be spent for Christ's sake. I'm willing to spend my life, even my very life, for Christ's sake." And though she had an extraordinary resignation with respect to life or death, yet the thoughts of dying were exceeding sweet to her. At a time when her brother was reading in the book of Job concerning worms feeding on the dead body, she appeared with a pleasant smile. And being inquired of about it, she said it was sweet to her to think of her being in such circumstances. At another time, when her brother mentioned to her the danger there seemed to be that the illness she then labored under might be an occasion of her death, it filled her with joy that almost overcame her. At another time, when she met a company following a corpse to the grave, she said it was sweet to her to think that they would in a little time follow her in like manner. Her illness in the latter part of it was seated much in her throat, and swelling inward filled up the pipe so that she could swallow nothing but what was perfectly liquid, but very little of that. And with great and long strugglings and stranglings, that which she took in flying out at her nostrils till she at last could swallow nothing at all. She had a raging appetite to food, so that she told her sister, when talking with her about her circumstances, that the worst bit that she threw to her swine would be sweet to her. But yet, when she saw that she could not swallow it, she seemed to be as perfectly contented without it, as if she had no appetite to it. Others were greatly moved to see what she underwent, and were filled with admiration at her unexampled patience. At a time when she was striving in vain to get down a little food, something liquid, and was very much spent with it, she looked up on her sister with a smile, saying, "Oh, sister, this is for my good." At another time when her sister was speaking of what she underwent, she told her that she lived a heaven on earth for all that. She used sometimes to say to her sister, under her extreme sufferings, "It's good to be so." Her sister once asked her why she said so. "Why?" she says. Because God would have it so. It's best that things should be as God would have them. It looks best to me." After her confinement, as they were leading her from the bed to the door, she seemed overcome by the sight of things abroad, as showing forth the glory of the being that had made them. As she lay on her deathbed, she would often say these words, "God is my friend." And once, looking up on her sister with a smile, said, "Oh, sister, how good it is, how sweet and comfortable it is to consider and think of heavenly things." And she used this argument to persuade her sister to be much in such meditations. She expressed on her deathbed an exceeding longing, both for persons in a natural state, that they might be converted, and for the godly, that they might see and know more of God. And when those that looked on themselves as in a Christless state came to see her, she would be greatly moved with compassionate affection. One in particular that seemed to be in great distress about the state of her own soul, and had come to see her from time to time, she desired her sister to persuade not to come any more, because the sight of her so wrought on her compassion that it overcame her nature. The same week that she died, when she was in distressing circumstances as to her body, some of her neighbors that came to see her asked if she was willing to die. She replied that she was quite willing either to live or die. She was willing to be in pain. She was willing to be so always as she was then, if that was the will of God. She willed what God willed. They asked her whether she was willing to die that night. She answered, "Yes, if it be God's will." And she seemed to speak all with that perfect composure of spirit, and with such a cheerful and pleasant countenance that it filled them with admiration. She said not long before she died that she used to be afraid how she would grapple with death, but she says, "God has showed me that he can make it easy in great pain." Several days before she died, she could scarcely say anything but just yes and no to questions that were asked her, for she seemed to be dying for 3 days together, but seemed to continue in an admirable, sweet composure of soul without any interruption to the last, and died as a person that went to sleep without any struggling about noon on Friday, June 27, 1735. She had long been infirm and often had been exercised with great pain, but she died chiefly of famine. It was, doubtless, partly owing to her bodily weakness that her nature was so often overcome and ready to sink with gracious affection. But yet the truth was that she had more grace and greater discoveries of God and Christ than the present frail state did well consist with. She wanted to be where strong grace might have more liberty, and be without the clog of a weak body. There she longed to be, and there she doubtless now is. She was looked upon amongst us as a very eminent instance of Christian experience. But this is but a very broken and imperfect account I have given of her. Her eminency would much more appear if her experiences were fully related, as she was wont to express and manifest them while living. I once read this account to some of her pious neighbors, who were acquainted with her, who said to this purpose that the picture fell much short of the life, and particularly that it much failed of duly representing her humility and that admirable lowliness of heart that at all times appeared in her. But there are, blessed be God, many living instances of much the like nature, and in some things no less extraordinary. Jonathan Edwards wrote it about a woman who died in 1735. That was when the Great Awakening was awakening. Jonathan Edwards, the preacher, was one of the persons who was responsible for it by one particular message you may have heard of, Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God, but other sermons too. And then came Whitfield after him. I read that Jonathan Edwards was born in the same year as John Wesley. John Wesley came over here for a while and failed miserably. Had to go back to England where he was supposed to be. Jonathan Edwards took it up from there. Wesley and Whitfield, at first enemies, were friends over in England, but Whitfield came over here too. So there was God had his men positioned where they needed to be. He still does. And I trust that God would send us a Whitfield or a Wesley or a Jonathan Edwards or someone who will bring the church and the West that you and I have been part of for all these years, bring it to repentance. I know there's some excitement going on out there, and I'm partly happy about it, but I don't see much of it leading to the holiness that these early Christians had. How many of them go through experiences? I know many people are being healed. Many are not. And those that are not, are they like this woman? Are you like that woman when your healing doesn't come right away? Are you willing to accept for a while what you have to accept? I know God wants to heal his people, but he has other things he likes to do with his people too. Enough of me. We'll come back to Jonathan Edwards some other time. Thank you so much for sharing with me this Sunday afternoon. God bless. Bye-bye. Oh, I didn't tell you. This is the Hackberry House of Chosun. Talk to you soon.